Okay, well, the next presentation is mine, so I guess I'll introduce myself. I'm Mark Sisterson. I work for the USDA, and the title of my talk is Ed Maturation Dynamics of Homolodisca vitropennis. And as you can imagine from the title, what I'm going to talk about is egg maturation or egg load dynamics, whichever one you prefer to call it. And in general, what I want to do is just really start by pointing out how important knowledge about egg maturation or egg load dynamics might be if you want to understand the ecology of an insect. The first one is that the number of mature eggs carried by a female often affects the decision to oviposit. So in this case, some studies have shown that if a female is carrying a large number of mature eggs, that female might be more likely to accept a low-quality host than a female who's only carrying a few mature eggs. If females have to feed as adults in order to mature additional eggs, this means that they're going to have to divide their time between foraging, between feeding and then looking for oviposition sites. And in some cases, the host that they might use for feeding and oviposition might be the same or they might be different. And then finally, if high quality hosts are abundant, total fecundity might be constrained by egg maturation rate. In this case, if you can imagine, if you have a female insect which can mature maybe 5 eggs per day, and that female happens to be in an area where high-quality hosts are exceptionally abundant, once she's laid that 5 eggs in that day, she basically has to rest and wait until she mature more eggs, and she's basically losing time to lay eggs. And these effects are well studied for holometabolous insects, particularly for insects in the Hymenoptera and the parasitoids, and also for many butterfly species in the Lepidoptera, but much less work has been done with hemimetabolous insects. And I happen to work on Homolodisca vitropennis, which is a hemimetabolous insect. It's a hemipteran, which is a cicadellid. And there are many aspects of this insect that I think make it a good system to look at questions about egg maturation with, and sort of try to understand whether or not these studies from holometabolous insects will translate over to hemimetabolous insects. At the same time, this is also an insect which is an invasive pest and which has caused a tremendous amount of economic damage, and so that there is also getting a good understanding of its reproductive dynamics would really help managing this insect. And so just to give you a little bit of background, it's a xylem feeder. It's highly polyphagous. And as I said, it was invasive. It's native to the southeastern United States and then invaded California in the late 1980s and have moved on to French Polynesia and Hawaii. And it's not an issue just of having the insect, but it's the reason it has a pest status is its ability to vector a bacterial pathogen, Xylella fastidiosa, which causes Pierce's disease of grapes. And so when I started my study, what I basically started with was a question, which is, how does host plant affect egg maturation rate? I had already done enough work to show that females emerge without any mature eggs and that they do continue to mature eggs as an adult. And I wanted to determine how feeding on different host plants or ovipositing on different host plants might affect that. And for this, I decided to use 3 different host plants, and I selected these host plants based upon qualities that were either in the literature or anecdotally reported by some of my colleagues. And so the 3 host plants were cowpea, which I selected because it's reported to be a good feeding host and a good oviposition host, sunflower because it's a good feeding host but a bad oviposition host, and sorghum because it's considered a bad feeding host but a good oviposition host. And the idea was that by using these host plants with these different characteristics, we'd be able to basically control for the effects of oviposition preference versus feeding preference. And so for my studies, what we did was we used field-collected insects for all of them. What we'd do is go out to the field and collect a couple hundred female insects and then bring them back to set up the experiment. And this slide has really far too much information on it, and I've got some pictures that'll follow, so I just want to briefly go over what we did with them. So a portion of the females were put into what we called the baseline, and these females were frozen immediately and dissected to determine the number of mature eggs they were carrying when they arrived into the lab. We then set up females into 2 different no-choice tests, a no-choice feeding-only test and a no-choice free-foraging test. And then we also did a choice test, which was also free-foraging. And these tests lasted for 1 week. We ended up doing 51 replicates over 3 dates. And to give you a little bit more about these tests, what we have here then is the no-choice feeding-only test. So in this case, what we did was we caged the insect basically inside a parafilm bag that was attached to a 15 milliliter tube. And so what this did was it provided the insect access to the stem of the plant where it could feed. But because the insect likes to lay its eggs on leaves, it's discouraged from ovipositing. So what we can get is a case where basically we can measure how much they're feeding by collecting the excreta, and then also see how many eggs they mature, but without being given the opportunity to oviposit. We then had our no-choice free foraging, and for this what we did was we put individual females onto each one of the host plants and caged them individually on the plant and allowed them to move freely about the plant for 1 week. And then we had a choice free foraging in which we put individual females into cages that had all three host plants available. And for this what we did was we monitored over 1 week in the morning and the afternoon which plant they were resting on, and then at the end of the week figured out how many eggs they had laid and which plant they had laid them on. And so for all of the experiments, what we did then, in the case of the ones where they were free foraging, what we did at the end of 1 week was to go through and look at how many eggs they had laid and counted the number of eggs that they laid. And we will refer to these as eggs that were deposited. And then for all of the treatments, what we did was dissect the females and determine how many mature eggs they were carrying on at the end of the experiment, and we'll refer to these eggs as carried. And so if we start by looking at the no-choice feeding only, what we can see is we've got the three different host plants here and the amount of excreta they produced over 1 week, and we can see that for cowpea and sunflower, the amount of feeding they did was identical, with less feeding on sorghum. However, when we look at how many eggs they had matured over that 1 week period, we can see that the number of eggs that were matured by females on cowpea was significantly greater than that for females on sunflower, even though they'd actually produced the same amount of excreta. So this indicates that it's an issue of not only how much they feed, but the quality of the food that they feed on. So now I want to look at the results for the free foraging test, both the no choice and the choice test. So we have, when they were held on cowpea only, sunflower only, sorghum only, and in the case where they were given the choice of being on whichever one of the host plants they liked. So if we look at the number of eggs that they deposited, the most eggs were deposited in the cowpea only treatment, followed by when they were given a mix of both host plants. And when we dissected those females at an end of a week, we found that the greatest number of eggs were carried by females in the cowpea only treatment. And when we add these two up to basically determine how many eggs these females matured over the entire week, what we can see is that in the cowpea only treatment, they matured significantly more eggs than in any of the other three treatments, including the one that involved all three host plants. So it's important to keep in mind that in this treatment, there was a cowpea plant that they were provided access to that was identical to the one when they did not have a choice. So what I want to do now is move and consider and look at how many eggs were matured between the free foraging tests and the feeding only tests. And so one of the hypotheses you might make about egg maturation is that the act of ovipositing might stimulate more egg maturation. And so by comparing egg maturation rates when they were given an opportunity to oviposit in the free foraging experiment versus the feeding only will give us a little bit of insight into that. And so what we can see is that on sunflower and sorghum, the number of eggs matured over 1 week were about the same, regardless of whether or not they were given the opportunity to oviposit, suggesting that the act of oviposition by itself didn't stimulate additional egg maturation. However, when they were held on cowpea, the females that were allowed to oviposit had significantly more eggs matured over 1 week than the ones that were only allowed to feed. And in this case, what was probably happening is when we were dissecting the females in the feeding-only treatment, these females were basically completely full of eggs. There wasn't a lot of room left in the abdomen. So what we suspect was happening is that that the act of ovipositing was basically cleaning out the abdomen, which would then allow them to have room to mature more eggs. And I want to finish up looking at the results by just looking at when they were given a choice of all three host plants, on looking at which host plant they were resting on versus where they were putting their eggs. And so again, we've got the three host plants here. And so when given a choice of the three host plants, the female spent most of their time on cowpea, which makes sense considering that this appears to be the host that's best for maturing eggs, and a little bit of time on sorghum. However, when we look at where they put their eggs, we find that they actually laid numerically more eggs on the sorghum than they did on the cowpea. And so this suggests that they're really moving between hosts which are good for egg maturation and then to hosts that are preferable for oviposition. And so just to summarize, host plant affected egg maturation rate, and it was an issue of the quality of the food, not just the quantity. Oviposition increased egg maturation for females on cowpea, but not for females on sunflower or sorghum, and that this largely appeared to be due simply to cleaning out the abdomen and creating more space for eggs. And more eggs were matured in no choice tests, specifically the cowpea free foraging, than in a choice test in which a cowpea plant was also present. And so what this suggests is that population growth rates for this insect will be higher in monocultures of high quality host plants. And so with that, I would like to thank my three technicians. And if there's time for questions.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Time for one
question. And if there's any questions. Okay.
What role, if any, does being inseminated have to do with their oviposition? Because you were collecting this from the field, so were you assuming that they were all prior inseminated?
Right. So the question is, what role does mating have on our result? And yeah, you're correct. We assume that they were mated. And from previous work we had done, we had found that if you go out and collect field-collected females, they'll basically lay eggs like crazy once they get into the lab. So it is an assumption, and at some point in time, I would really like to be able to learn how to dissect females to determine if they're mated already. So, thank you.